Welcome to the chat with Linda Sims here on WWGH 107.1 FM radio, streaming live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You have the opportunity and privilege to download free app called TuneIn and search WWGH on any electronic device. And we will be at your fingertips and you will be able to listen to the many programs that we offer on WWGH. Thank you for tuning in. Once again, I would like to share with you those who faithfully support the chat, Victory and Truth Ministries, Bishop J.C. Church, location 485, State Route 4, south of Bucyrus and north of Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 419-563-9565. Chappie's Hydraulic LLC, Hydraulics Hole Specialist, 309 Suite A, North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-382-8552. The owner there is Charles Chapman. Emergency number, 740-802-1242. Logos Christian Ministries, location at 582 Lee Street. Pastor Jackie Peterson here in Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. Inspect Ohio, your one-call home inspection company for your real estate needs, 1-800-347-5322. Okay, now we will get to my guest today. I have with me Steve Coulter, attorney at law.
Ted Coulter.
Attorney at law here in Marion, Ohio. Also, Steve Chaffin. Okay, did I say it right?
Got that right.
Okay. I kind of get that mixed up, Chaffin. Okay. Great, I did good. Okay. Assistant Law Director of the City of Marion, Ohio. Also, you are a former Field Organization for America for Democrats Action.
That's right.
Working Families.
That's
WIN
right.
Program. Also, former campaign manager, former field representative for Democratic Party. Okay. And a student of politics and law. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Well, Ted's got many accolades he could share with
us.
I'm just an individual. Conservative.
Attorney at law.
Ted's one of the most well-spoken people that I...
You'll have to send me some of your...
Accomplishments. I'm sure there've been many.
Yeah. So I can, next time we have I can give the rundown.
That's right.
Okay.
He deserves it.
I know he's a well-known gentleman here in Marion, Ohio, attorney at law, and well-respected. And we like to have him here to represent the Republican Party.
Or the more conservative viewpoint.
I don't want to indicate I'm a Republican operative or a Republican Party paid representative. So
okay.
I think more conservative viewpoint would be a fair
And Ted's definitely fair-minded. I mean, I'm not going to say that a lot of Republicans aren't, but there are many that take a sharper ideological point of view than Ted does. So that's why I think Ted and I can get along and share our views, because we don't, even though we disagree strongly, it's not a sharp ideological divide. In fact,
fight.
Ted and I often comment that the more we talk, the more we're going around in a circle saying the same things. And we're both against corporate greed and the power of the corporations that control our lives. So we both share that point of view.
Right, and that's one of the things I was hoping we could talk a little bit, and so today about is the discussion that's going out in the public and the civil lack of cooperation, able to have talk about to try to resolve issues, we in this situation that we're faced currently, because it seems so often that there isn't a lot of intellectual honesty on trying to deal with the issues. We immediately jump to the conclusion, well, you're a conservative and you're a racist, or you're a liberal and you're a radical and extremist in that regard. And then with that name calling that's going on, we don't have a discussion concerning really a solution of the problems at our hand, and therefore we just further cause a lack of unity in our country.
And I want to sort of jump ahead. I know Ted wants to talk about the Jim Jordan event. I want to thank Congressman Jordan for actually showing up, listening to people's concerns, and talking to them about what they were concerned about. A lot of congressmen around the country have not been doing that. Or, in some cases, they've been shouted down. I certainly urged our people, and I hope they did as much as possible, to be respectful and to allow a question and answer. So that's, I agree with Ted. That's the kind of dialogue we need. I wish Congressman Jordan would be more involved with give and take. I can tell you this from personal experience with him, that when I called his office, he called me back. Okay. He called me back personally one day on a Saturday morning, which totally blew me away. He's responded to every letter I've ever written to him, and his staff is very excellent. So I disagree with him 100% on everyone's views, but he does his constituency work, and he's respectful.
Okay, but you did disagree on every one. Okay.
Almost every one of
them. So I guess everyone is over the shock of the results of the election now, right?
I am, finally. It took me months and months. I was about ready to crawl into a hole, but I overcame it, and I'm okay now. So.
How did you feel about the results of the election, Mr. Coulter?
Well, again, in terms of, was Mr. Trump my first choice? Possibly not, in all due respect, but certainly has that conservative bent. The question is whether you're going to follow conservative principles or whether you'll go maybe to some areas that raise concerns on both sides of the of this political spectrum as he activates his agenda.
Well, I would definitely be concerned that he's going to go beyond conservatism. If you looked at what his representative, Mr. Bannon, said last week, he was interviewed at the CPAC conference. He used a phrase called economic nationalism. I had never heard Donald Trump actually use that phrase. He's talked about America first, but never the phrase economic nationalism. That scares the poop out of me. It should scare the poop out of the 17,000 voters in Marion County who supported Mr. Trump, because what we're talking about here is basically, and Ted and I may agree with this, and I hate to throw this term around, but during the German whole deal, the corporations, the whole idea behind National Socialism was it was economic nationalism. The German corporations basically made a deal with Hitler to nationalize the economy, to basically take control of the economy and to make it Germany first. And I hope we're not going down that road. And I hate to throw that term out, Ted. I know that's very sensitive to many people, but we don't want the idea that the corporations are going to control even more than what they're doing now. And that's what I'm worried about. He'll cut deals with certain big corporations to keep jobs here in exchange for all kinds of tax benefits and trade benefits. You know, I don't think we want to become an imperialist country. I don't think we want to be the global bully. And when Trump says that we're going to have more nukes than anybody else, and we're going to have the biggest, baddest military so nobody messes with us. We already have the biggest, baddest military in the world. We don't need a bigger and badder military. We don't need to scare people into submission.
Right.
And that's the direction I think he's taken us. And I don't think the people wanted that. I think, sure, they were concerned about jobs, and some were concerned about immigration, blah, blah, blah. A lot of different issues. And they liked the way the straight talk that Trump did. But if I would beg them, the 17,000 voters that voted for Trump in Marion County, to please critically examine what he's doing and what he's talking about and his actions.
Yes, pay attention, absolutely.
And for your sake of your children and grandchildren and everybody else, be, you know, critical and speak out. And I'd be happy to talk to anybody on the other side of the aisle. You know, so like Ted said, we need to have a dialogue, but I'm very afraid, and we should all be afraid of where we're headed.
Well, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think the words matter, okay?
Yes, they do.
And what Steve has mentioned is very, very different concepts in that regard can be interpreted in different ways.
True.
And that's where this fuel gets in this division and creates, because inflammatory words are used. I'm not saying Steve did have that purpose in that fashion, but I think we have to analyze those words carefully, because that cuts off the talking and to meet the needs that both sides have. Because a lot of the goals of both sides are there in terms of, you know, wanting the country to be positive and to succeed and be successful.
Yeah.
Now, using some examples, you know, Steve used very carefully about using the Nazi example, and then in terms of Germany, and the question is in terms of the Germans and the Nazis in terms of overcoming and taking over their businesses and such for their agenda. And I think that's the difference here in the Trump administration. It's not in terms of government ownership of the businesses and our production capacities in the United States in that regard. It's to encourage him.
Mm-hmm.
But so you quickly go over that line, and then the same thing is, okay, when Bannon talks about economic nationalism, what does he really mean if you drop to that conclusion? It's because the same thing, and this is what's so deja vu, so to speak, when President Obama came in 2008, and re-elect 2012, you know, the right was so concerned, or where he says, is he going to take us down to a road, you know, socialism, even though the theories of many of his policies had that socialist Marxist criteria in it in order to meet what he felt was social justice in all due respect.
Right.
But I think we can't get in this mode again, okay, he's an extremist writer, because it wipes out the dialogue to come up with solutions. Because people right now, it seems like they're just positioning themselves, you know, in terms of on the Democratic side, Pelosi, you know, yesterday or day before talking about impeachment already, just like they're maybe unfair, undermining, trying to legitimize, you know, President Barack Obama.
Yes.
Again, we get off
That's
into
true.
Those tangents
That's
so
true.
Quickly in politicizing, then the problems are not solved in that regard. So that's why I'm very concerned when we use this language and language being bandied around so quickly. Again, we're getting thrown off to solutions. We're also then, I think, really falling the hands that both, I think, Mr. Schaaf and I both are concerned about in terms of elitists and oligarchs who want to control for their own benefit and profit, because they love it. Really, people are in chaos fighting each other over these side issues. The problems are not being solved, and then they still profiteer in that regard. So it really takes more than a 5-second soundbite on a mainstream national broadcasting network, you know, and just to say something and everybody gets on tangents, or they have to report more than say we believe this is going to happen or will this possibly happen. That's where some of our news has went to. It hasn't went to the confirmation stage, and therefore we're in this big mess.
And that takes me to the war on the media as far as our newly elected president is concerned, you know, and ask me a nice question, you know. Well, that's not a nice question. Where you sit down, who's got a nice question for me? So how can we get to the bottom of the words that he used if no one can ask him exactly what do you mean by that, sir? You know, how do you see or foresee, you know, getting to the bottom of that or bringing that forward for the people? And what is it about just nice questions?
Well, that may be the most dangerous thing he's done, is to call the press the enemy of the people. Our founding fathers strongly believed in the freedom of the press. In fact, the reasons why the country was even formed is they had the committees of correspondence. Franklin had a newspaper. There were thousands of newspapers. You know, 100 years ago, we had many, many newspapers. We had the penny press, even before we had talk radio. And that's how people communicated. In fact, the Marion Star was called the Marion Democrat back in the 1890s. So then there was a Republican paper as well, but back then the Democrats were pretty popular in the rural areas. So I guess this radio station is critical.
Yes, it is.
And all the radio and Facebook, all the other social media stuff is critical for us to be involved in, share our viewpoints. We have to fundamentally protect our rights, freedom of speech, and that includes freedom of the press. So
right,
I hope that everybody will do that and support places like WWGH. It's a great forum for people to get onto.
Yes, it is. And nationwide, I mean, if we don't know what's going on in the world today, or we're biased, we only hear all the good things about the president. And I know there's good and bad in everyone, but we have to face it all. As people, every day we have to face it all, the negativity and what's positive about each and every one of us. So I guess you probably gave your view on war on the media, right?
Well, I guess maybe I see it a little bit differently in that regard. And I see it as a discourse, a conversation back and forth. You know, maybe some prior presidents in that regard, it'd be more courteous in a regard, and they just take their lumps, and the question maybe became their ability to message and be able to say what their position was on things. And so I don't see it in terms of, okay, a war on the media as much as we see the other hand of President Trump responding to the daily attacks that's on him in the news. You listen, you turn on the ABC, NBC, or CBS, you know, or USA Today. It's always Trump negative, Trump negative, Trump negative in that fashion. So basically he's responding back. So therefore I don't see it as in terms of limitation of freedom of the press. Again, people who want to delegitimize and make him the worst president in the world, so hopefully they can get rid of him, look like, because that's why I see part of the narrative is to try to delegitimize him in all the respect, and therefore that's not one of the tools. He's a racist, he's against the free press, he's going to have control of everything, be authoritarian in all the respects. I think there's a different view.
Well, you know, certainly if people deserve criticism, they're going to get it, and everything that he's done since the day he took office, I think, warranted some criticism. When one of the first things you do is fire your acting attorney general because they disagree with you, that's certainly not a profile in courage. When you try to ban people from coming into this country that are actually legally allowed to come in, they have visas, from these countries there. Some of them were doctors, some of them were translators from these countries, and they were banned from coming in by an executive order that was not vetted properly, and the courts threw it out. I mean, when you do those kind of things.
Why are they acting on it, though? I mean, they're absolutely acting on the words that he sent forth. They are stopping people from coming in.
Yeah.
I saw on, I think it was Yahoo this morning, where they had stopped Muhammad Ali's son and wife because they have different sounding names. They did let her go because she had a picture of her and her husband, but they still detained his son. So even if you have the proper papers to come into the United States, they are still stopping
people. Yeah, you can't ignore facts. So, you know, Ted, I understand your point of view, but you know, the press is going to report what's going on, and whether they're not going to be lapdogs for Donald Trump, I'll probably tell you that. They weren't during the campaign. If he is believes what he's doing, you know, he's going to continue to do that. And if he's doing good things for the people will overlook the media. They did in the election, unfortunately. But I think we should defend the rights of people to speak out, and even if we disagree with them. So Mr. Trump can disagree with the media, what they're saying. He can get on. He has the bully pulpit. He's going to speak to the Congress tonight. It'll be televised nationally. He can say whatever he wants. I watched his inaugural. I listened to the address. He did not inspire me. You know, here were the words from JFK's inaugural. Okay. We will support any friend and oppose any foe to assure the success of liberty. Here's Trump's quote. We're going to use, exploit, and surpass us no more. America is going to, from this day forward, is going to be only America first. Those kind of things don't inspire me. You should set up a vision for what you want the country to be, and you should ask people to follow you. And if Trump would do that, I think a lot more people would follow him. I'm asking the 17,000 voters in Marion County to critically look at his words and his actions and think, is that the kind of person you want to follow off the cliff?
Again, it goes back to words.
Right,
words. When JFK was said that, I think America and the situation was quite different in that regard. The issues and the concerns on the people's minds was quite different. You know, the people, like I remember some of the interviews as being done of individuals after the election, and why did those Democrats vote for, you know, Trump? And I think one, I remember that, I forget what major network is on, it says, fine and dandy for those in Hollywood, it'd be the biggest worry be which limousine they're going to take to which fancy restaurant they're going to be when I'm struggling to get, you know, food on my table for my children and I'm losing my house in all respects. So we can talk about all these visions or whatever,
right.
as JFK did, maybe in a time when he was trying to go to the moon, etc. But we got some realities here, no matter where you're from or what region of this particular country in all due respect. And so that's what he was speaking of. That's the issue now. Mm-hmm. How are we going to deal with those issues? And we're continue if we're going to spend money across the seas, and that's going to benefit our own individuals. If it's not going to bring jobs, it's not going to put food on the table, then there's a problem. And that's what I think should inspire people. Again, it goes back to what's your narrative and try and manipulate to attack, you know, to get rid of, you know, Mr. Trump in all the respects. So
let's talk about foreign aid. You're bringing up foreign aid. He's proposing to cut the foreign aid. First of all, Linda, the fact is foreign aid represents 1% of the federal budget. In fiscal year 2017, there was $42.4 billion being allocated for foreign aid. The biggest part of that is for health, is for preventing communicable diseases around the world. Mm-hmm. We don't want to have a rash of diseases brought into this country like the Zika virus and other things. We spend money to help other countries. And we spend a lower percentage of our GDP than many other countries around the world. Great Britain spends more than we do, part of our GDP. We want to be leaders in international global health to make sure that diseases aren't spread globally. We want to end communicable diseases like malaria, smallpox, these kind of things.
And we're
doing it, and we should continue. The other important part is a significant percent of foreign aid goes to military spending. And our number one beneficiary of that is Afghanistan. Number two is Israel.
Okay.
Now, we invaded the country of Afghanistan, and rightly so, but we shouldn't abandon our initial investment. Mm-hmm. We invested in that country to rid itself from some radical extremists. We should keep investing in Afghanistan to build roads, bridges, schools, hospitals, those kind of things. That's what the people of Afghanistan want. We shouldn't abandon that. We made a big mistake in the 80s when we withdrew from Afghanistan, and that created that little hotbed of terrorism. So I think people should look critically about this idea of reducing foreign aid, and we should not become, again, we should not be an isolationist country. We tried that. It didn't work out well. We ended up getting into war. We shouldn't be an imperialist country. We should be a country that is, and we're the richest country in the world. We should be willing to share our wealth with other countries, and not so much military. I'm not for a lot of military aid. I don't think guns buys you a lot of friends, but I think this kind of economic development aid and investment in health, preventive communicable disease is a good way to go.
And you brought up health care, so even though you talked about it abroad, the United States borders, also what's going on in our own country as far as health care is concerned. And I know that like 5-8% of the people do support Donald Trump for his views. But what about the health care and those who will maybe be without health care? Do the Republicans really have a plan?
I'll let Ted address that.
Or do you know anything about that?
Well, there's a lot of good points. I want to get into what you just asked, but I want to respond a little bit.
Go
because
ahead.
One thing that I hear so often is America is the richest country in the world. We may be also the country with the largest debt in the world, too. So I don't know how we can be the richest if we've got the biggest debt in the world with $20 trillion in all due respect. So when we talk about reviewing our foreign aid as to whether we should be spending as much, it goes to the question, was that part of trying to bring that budget under some type of constraint, so therefore we don't have an economic class which would bring much more suffering than the lack of the handing out of dollars everywhere in the world and in our country. But the other thing then in that context, and moving on to what you want to talk about, Linda, is that it goes back to, again, affordability, what our country can do.
Mm-hmm.
We hear so much in terms, and legitimately so, when you hear and see individuals who are suffering without medical care, as it was the situation made for some of the Affordable Care Act provisions that kicked in, which one of the main ones was the expansion of Medicaid in all due respect. You had people falling through the cracks in all due respect. So the question is going to become, how do we get a system not only meets those needs mm-hmm. of those individuals,
right.
but what seems to be lost in the discussion, and you talk about the media in that regard, you don't hear the other side of it. Okay, fine, you have those people who are afraid they're going to lose their health insurance, but how about those because they cannot get it themselves, they can't afford it in the sense of being lower income, and therefore they needed subsidies or Medicaid, but those who lost it who are paying and have income and pay taxes who lost it. Okay, you know, I'll use myself as an example. I had a certain insurance company. Obamacare came in, premiums doubled, deduction doubled. Okay, then I tried to find another company. So I got, it'd be United Healthcare. Mm-hmm. They were here a year and they canceled AHA. So my coverage got canceled.
Wow.
So then we look in terms, okay, where can I get insurance coverage? I call mm-hmm. the local insurance agent and say, hey, we're not getting paid any commissions. Go to, you know, the government program. I go that. I live in Crawford County. There's only one option, only one provider, Blue Cross Blue Shield. I only had one choice to choose from in all respect.
Okay.
Again, double the premiums and deductible. So that I'm giving that preface. There's two sides of the discussion. Again, this is where civil discourse, mm-hmm. you know, is important. How are we going to, especially when so many people are getting assistance out for treatment for addiction and such through Medicaid, how are we going to meet that need, but also the needs of those who are paying the ticket for those individuals in all due respect. Both sides have legitimate concerns.
Yes,
so is it going
absolutely.
To be a question, and I'm not the one who studied this in detail, and I could be, you know, mocked or modified on this, but it's going to be a question since we got Kasich, who's now worried about and going down the worst, since he is part of the Medicaid expansion. Is he going to get those dollars for the next two terms? Because his budget is skyrocketing. He had one of the biggest budget increases in the country for our state in all due respect to the terms that he was here. But is it going to be a situation where we're going to keep some form of the Medicaid expansion for those people who need it desperately in that regard, but in we're going to free up the market so we have more than one provider in that regard, so people who are paying their taxes that pay for the Medicaid are going to be able to have insurance themselves.
Right.
And so I think that's where some of the fix is going to have to come in. But it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be hard
yeah.
in that fashion.
I thought it was kind of ironic. The president said yesterday, who knew that health care would be so complicated? Well, how about 50 million people who have insurance coverage now that didn't have it before the Affordable Care Act, Mr.
Mm-hmm.
President? A lot of people understand how complicated health care is,
right.
and I was one of those who's actively involved with an organization called Healthcare for America. And we spent years and years and years studying this problem. Before the Affordable Health Care Act, we had tried
Hillary
for 40
Clinton,
years
to
get things done. And here were the two prongs of the Affordable Care Act, getting access.
Mm-hmm.
50 million people now have access, people with pre-existing conditions, chronic health conditions that couldn't get insurance. We had to do something to improve access, mm-hmm. the Medicaid expansion program. We did that. we've filled a lot of the gaps. Now, Ted's correct. And the big problems was, and that this is one of the things we were trying to fix in the Affordable Care Act, to get the insurance company to pony up. The deal was they were going to get some extra money from the young and healthy who weren't buying through the mandatory coverages. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing the Republicans want to do away with right now. Just this year is the first year that people are going to get that penalty on their taxes if they didn't get coverage. That had to, it was phased in over a period of time.
I already paid my penalty last
good.
Year.
Did
before
good.
The year I got canceled.
Well, I'm sorry you had to pay it, Ted, but we have to get
too.
People
me
in.
Too.
The only way we're going to get costs down is to bring everybody into the system. That's what auto insurance is based upon. That's what life insurance is based on. You get everybody in the system, and therefore the risk pool is big enough. Now, if you do what the Republicans want, we're going to start throwing people off. We're going to make the risk pool smaller. Yeah, you'll be able to buy 20 policies, Ted. You can get the bottom basement box of soap you want for $20 a month, and you'll have no coverage. If you remember before the Affordable Care Act, people bought policies that thought were covering them, and it didn't. They had lifetime caps. I went to the hospital last year, had a $100,000 bill. People were going to the hospital for cancer treatments, finding out it wasn't going to be covered because their lifetime cap kicked them off. So, yes, the ACA mandated that insurance companies, if you're going to get on the exchange, you're going to have certain benefit limits. You can't kick people off for pre-existing conditions. You can't kick them off for lifetime caps. So it's a balance. Now, was it perfect? No. In my opinion, we would just do Medicare for all. That would be a real simple fix.
And that's what he was trying to do.
Yeah, but we couldn't get that. You guys aren't, you call it socialism. Well, the VA is socialism. Our public roads are socialism. Our public schools are socialism. You
jobs
and I have had
are
this,
socialism too?
Socialism is a broad concept. Don't equate that with communism or totalitarianism, because many democratic countries are socialist. And we have socialist programs in this country. So I say we stick with the Affordable Care Act. If the Republicans want to make some compromises, sit down with the Democrats and talk.
And
we tried that during the time we
it.
Passed the Affordable Care Act, and all they wanted to do was gut it with all the protections that it was that they didn't want to really compromise with
and
it. That's
Obama's
why
Obama's name off of it. I mean,
yeah,
that,
it's Trump Care now. Trump's responsible.
Take his name off of it.
The Republicans
you know.
Can call it Ryan Care. I don't care what they call it. That's irrelevant.
Right.
You shouldn't hate something just because you hated the president. But we can still work together. But Mr. Trump's got to start reaching out a little bit to the other side. He wasn't elected by the majority of the people. He's got to think about that. The 17,000 voters in Marion County who voted for Mr. Trump has to realize if we're going to do things together, we've got to talk.
Yes, we do.
Like I said, I'm encouraged. I'll talk to anybody who wants to talk to me from the other side. You can give them my phone number if you want, Linda. But I'd like to work on some things. Ted and I talk all the time, try to get some dialogue. We can't go back. We got to go forward, and I'm willing to work with anybody on going forward, as long as we don't reduce access. Now, I heard today the chairman of one of the committees in Congress say, oh, yeah, we're going to be reducing access. And that's not acceptable in my mind.
Of course they're going to have to do it that way. You have people who do have money whose premiums are a lot higher than people who don't have money, and they are the ones who are complaining. A friend of mine, she says, did you know my Obamacare went up to $2,000 a month? I'm like, wow. You know how many months it takes me to generate that kind of money? But, you know, and that's her, you know, she does, that's her complaint. And I understand it. I said, well, maybe you can afford it, you know. Maybe so.
I don't know.
And that was part of the message that resonated when Trump ran for office.
Right.
Those people, whether Democrats or independents, was paying those high premiums.
That's true.
And all they saw was same high premiums. They went with Hillary because she wanted to keep the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping that if she did become president, that she was willing to critique it also, you know, fix the bad parts. And
one of the things that Hillary proposed, and I think is great, is rolling back Medicare eligibility age to 55. And the reason that would be good is there's concerns on your side, Ted, about the deficit and the debt. And Medicare is a big part of the problem. Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of people that are the beneficiaries now that are elderly that are taking a lot of services, and we don't have as many young people contributing more. We need to raise the eligibility so that people like me, who are relatively healthy, I'd pay Medicare, no problem. That would bring a bunch of younger, healthier people into the system, and we wouldn't suck the resources out as much.
Right.
I'd take Medicare for everybody. I think people in their 20s should contribute more towards their health care costs. They think they're, you know, indestructible. They don't want to pay for anything, but then they show up at the emergency room or even in their 30s, and some of them don't take health insurance to their employer, which they should. But so I think everybody should be in. We should have a national health care insurance program. Everybody should pay a fair share and get a fair benefit. Now, they're saying that's rationally, that's socialism. There's always going to be people who get more care and less care because of their income. There's always going to be the haves and the have-not.
That's true.
Ted, we always know how that is. So even with a system like Medicare for All, there'd be those that could afford a little bit better on the side, some better care, and those would afford a little less. But it's a more fair system than what we got now. We have a pretty extreme system, even under the Affordable Care Act. We didn't cut the insurance companies out of the picture. They're still providing the coverage for most people.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So what do you propose, Ted? What do you think a fair system would be?
Well, I think it's a system meeting needs.
Okay.
Yes.
How do we do that?
And meeting those needs, which hopefully will keep the costs under control in all respects.
Right.
If we want to go back historically, you know, we've been a country, even though Bernie Sanders, one of the things that really irritated me the other day when it was one of the congressional meetings they had, he said, we're not a compassionate country. You know, and I said, gosh, what more can we give? I guess we can, you know, if we have to. But going back to that theme of, okay, meeting needs in mm-hmm. regard, thinking of individuals I met who were the working poor that couldn't afford insurance and they had cancer and they were out of luck, then we need to have a system that meets those particular needs. So the question is, when you have this formula that, okay, we're going to provide health insurance for all and the government's going to pay for it,
yeah.
what's the problem of how we're going to pay for it as a government, how much we're going to tax people to able to do that? Mm-hmm. And that's the question is, you know, the right to your own property and your own right or your earnings versus the government, and that's part of the socialism theory and the concerns that you should be able to control your own earnings, your income, and your fruits of your labor rather than the government taking it all. But with that said, then, the question is, how do we get a system that meets needs? You know, and that goes back to waste and fraud. You know, we have situations now under the Medicaid system. I'm sure Steve may be seen this before. We may have a household, and I respect people trying to make it all hard, but you may have a husband who has health insurance to work, the wife in that regard, who or they separate or they're not married, get Medicaid, they have kids together,
mm-hmm.
so the kids are on the husband's insurance, she has a separate Medicaid card that takes away of all deductibles and co-pays in that mm-hmm. regard, but are we really being fair to those then who don't have any and having this extra cost? So it's a question, I think, of going back, of meeting the needs of people with what we can afford, and that may be the not expansive program that, you know, Steve wants to talk about.
Well, you know, I always find it ironic that the people that oppose programs like Medicaid throw out a couple of examples of fraud. We heard the president say there were, you know, millions of people committing voter fraud. There was no proof to that. Houston did an extensive study, and I think he found 59 cases of people who were illegally registered.
I ain't getting apples and oranges.
No,
here.
It's
we're
the same thing.
You
and Ronald Reagan did the same thing. Throw out anecdotal evidence to destroy a program. There may be elements of some Medicaid fraud. Most Medicaid fraud is done by providers, not by recipients. And you talk about Medicare. Medicare is not a tax. Medicare is a premium that you mm-hmm. pay, just like insurance premiums.
Right,
you pay for it for health care. It's an exchange. If government can provide a service better than the private sector, which I would argue Medicare does, then you should give it credit for that. Are you saying Medicare is a bad program?
Well, I think what it gets into is you're trying to cross the bridge here on the matter in terms of what we look at in regards to control and options in all due respect. So therefore, when you talk about in terms of government providing all, then therefore you have the government controlling all, and then your source of your options are limited. And I think that's what troubles a lot of individuals in regard. And then the tremendous cost that comes with it, which is just not viable in the long term.
But you didn't answer the question. Is Medicare a good program or not?
It's a decent program.
It's a decent program.
Well, when you're 65, are you going to go on it?
I was hoping to last out till 70. So
everybody I know
right,
on Medicare, including most doctors, think it's a great program. They don't have to deal with hundreds of insurance claim forms. They know what they're going to get for their services. The patients that go there are treated well. It's a great program. It's lasted for all the years it's been, and people want it more. So I think if people hang in there, we will eventually get Medicare for All. It may take another 50 years. But that'll eventually happen because people will see the frustration. The insurance company's number one goal is not to provide access and quality care. It's to make money.
Right. And, you know, gentlemen, I really can't see the difference between little government and big government. I see government in control of everything that goes on, whether it's the left point of view or the right point of view. The government is still the ultimate voice of everything that goes on. So I don't understand where people are trying to split that down the middle. Well, we got little government over here, but still the government is in charge, right? Am I wrong?
I'm not afraid of government.
No, I'm not.
Government's
either.
My friend.
I work with police and firefighters
and city council members and county commissioners and county and city auditors. I work with people in government every day. I got no complaints about government anywhere, even the big bad federal government. We work with
there.
The FBI and ICE.
Can't get around it.
And, you know, Department of Labor. And, you know, I don't understand what this fear of government is.
They're calling all the shots, right?
Well, yeah, but that's the way it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be the government. It should be the people. It should be the people calling the shots. And when you put this amount of power with your health care, which causes a large percentage of our economy in that regard, that's where the abuse can occur. So just as Steve is concerned about the fears of Trump of what's going on the road we're going down, I think that's the concern on the other side. When you mass this power, when you have the government controls, if it's going to be our health care, which is a big part of our economy in that regard, and you have take other portions of our economy, what left is it for the rights of the individual? Which, again, Steve many times wants to talk about, but it's how we protect those rights.
We protect those rights by protecting freedom of speech, freedom of press, the freedoms guaranteed us in the Constitution. I was proud of the 150 people that showed up at the town hall for Congressman Jordan. I encourage every listener to speak up, call in here, write to your congressmen, senators, your local representatives, speak your mind. I mean, be involved. That's how we protect our individual rights,
true.
Ted. We stay involved.
That's right.
You know, you got a complaint about government? Let us know. I'm in government. Call me up. Let me know what your concern is. I mean, the only way that people are going to run the system is to be involved. When people don't show up, when they don't educate themselves about the issues, they're ceding their power to the government. We are the government if we take charge and we get involved. So register to vote, get yourself educated, right. Participate in the political process, and then you're going to feel empowered. You're not going to be afraid of the government anymore.
And who is afraid of the government?
Not me. Unless they come knocking on my door in the middle of the night, which, I'm hoping that won't happen.
And I understand that, that people should take charge of their cities and their towns, whether rural or like the city of Marion and our state. I understand that to a certain extent, too. But still, we are governed by laws which have been established not only by God, but has come down, to our president, our governors, our mayors, our lawyers, our teachers, our parents. So we're still under an umbrella of governing laws. So to me, that's still all government.
I hope the president will respect that as he goes forward. I have some concerns that he even knows what the Constitution is, let alone respect it.
Wait a minute. It's kind of ironic when he talks about that. I mean, when you talk about when he's trying to deregulate, so many things, and so people have more freedoms in that regard, which is supposed to be the protection of the Constitution to protect the individual in that regard. So that's what I'm finding kind of interesting, the narrative aspect that he's an anti-constitutionalist when so many things he's doing is really trying to free things up to give the power back to the people versus the government.
How is deconstruction of the administrative state going to protect the people? You know the reason we have rules for clean water and clean air and making sure our drugs and our food are safe is because the government is the watchdog. They protect us. Police and fire, they protect us. We need rules to protect. If you want to poison me by selling me some snake oil on a street corner, I want to know that the snake oil is safe. I got to have, I might not have the
FDA,
power.
FDA, right?
Right. I mean, come on, think about it, people. This is not crazy government trying to overreach. We have these regulations because they're helpful, because we need them. The EPA was started by Richard Nixon. He wants to do away with the EPA. What are you going to do, be like China? Can't walk around the street because you have to have a mask on because you have asthma because so much pollution? We have to have, and if you go back to the founders, they were very concerned about the power of the corporations. They wanted to have enough power in the government to restrict the oligarchs from taking over.
Right.
I'm afraid Donald Trump loves the oligarchs. He loves the Russians. He loves the idea of a bunch of businessmen making decisions. Look what he's doing with his cabinet. Look what he's secret meetings with all the corporations. I don't believe in the oligarchs. I think they're dangerous.
See, before you just make broad comments, that sounds like the media, okay? There's got to be facts and proof behind all these particular things in that regard. That's where the discourse is breaking down again. And when you go back into the regulations in that fashion, there's overreaching regulations.
Give me an example. Give me one overreaching regulation.
Like on our own farm, I can't take a fence row out unless I get a government approval anymore.
A fence row. From who? Who? What government is regulating that?
The U.S. government, USDA.
What regulation?
Because if you have funds, okay, because they want to protect wetlands now.
Okay, so they're trying to protect wetlands, and they're saying you can't take a fence row out without their approval.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ask for their approval? Did you ask for their approval to take your fence rail out, or not?
If you want to take the fence rail out legally, you have to ask for their approval.
And did you ask for their approval? No, you didn't, right? I just want, if they unreasonably denied the approval, there's a process to appeal, right? You're a lawyer, Ted. You understand. Regulations don't
mean... They shouldn't even be telling in terms of a private landowner what they can do or not.
They have a right on the air.
I have a right to have my wetlands
protected.
Did you
have a question?
It's an environmental issue.
Good afternoon. Hello? Hello?
Maybe it was the wrong number.
They were calling in and then they hung up on you.
If you would like to call in to connect with my guest today, please call 740-383-9944. We only have a few more minutes left, so if you want to have your question heard, please call back. Okay, so what are you hoping to hear from the president tonight from his address?
Something about hope, and you know, give the people that didn't vote for him some reason to expect a little more reasonableness out of the guy. You know, tell us what you really want to do. He wants to increase defense. Why do we need to increase defense? Give me some reasons. ISIS, we're defeating ISIS.
Right.
Okay, who else? Muslim extremists. Well, okay, maybe we can do a little more for with the CIA or you know something to monitor internet traffic or
right.
something. Okay, give me a specific. Maybe I can support that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just talk about making more nukes. I don't think that's making the world safer. So give us some specifics on what you're going to be doing. You're going to repeal the Affordable Care Act? Okay, fine. How are you going to provide access to these 50 million people who got the coverage?
Right.
Let's hear the specifics on it. You know, if he gives us something to hang our hats on, we can have a little more hope for another 30 days. Otherwise, you're going to see more people in the street.
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. What about you, Mr. Coulter?
What I hope to hear is that he's going to be able to have a discourse with rationale behind things, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That he can overcome the narratives and the five-second comments by his opponents who want to derail his agenda based on his political philosophy and the goals he's trying to reach by name-calling and such, by stating rationales and reasons why he's doing things
right.
So the American people can understand that in that regard. Because I believe if they do understand that, then they'll continue to support him as necessary, and maybe we'll make things better.
It would be a lot easier, you know, if we really understood what he meant by what he was saying, you know, and the tweets and things like that, you know, it's like... two or three words here.
Right, and the reasons why.
Yeah.
And why there's a rationale if he wants to do something, the reasons he wants to do it, and why he thinks it works, and what the options will happen negatively if he doesn't do those things.
True.
To be able to explain that more thoroughly and have a discourse rather than just the platitudes in that regard at which you run into. And Mr.
Right.
Shay's been very good today.
Well, you know, you make your argument like we do in court every day.
Yeah.
You got the facts, you got the law, you know, support it, and people will buy it. You
and
know,
we need to understand those things.
Yeah, I don't know what economic nationalism means. I'd like to hear more about it. I tried to research it, and I couldn't figure it out even after doing some research. So,
and I think what the people really understand is we were at a national crisis from 9/11, okay? National crisis hit our country. The economy, everything went rock bottom. The car industry, the banks, people lost their houses, and people have been trying to rebound. And, of course, the government had to come in and help the people and businesses. You know, if those things hadn't happened, where would we be now? Which we don't know, since
yeah.
it didn't happen that
Every
way.
Every time there's
know.
A natural disaster,
right.
we need the government
so,
to come in.
And I think
if a tornado hits your farm, Ted, I hope we can help you out with a government loan to get you back on your feet.
So then you can tell me what I have to do, how I have to
well,
rebuild the barn.
There may be some restrictions, but you're going to get the money.
That's the basic. Are we going to have free people, individuals who make their own decisions? Or are we going to become so dependent on government and so taxed by government for all the programs that we cannot make personal choices anymore?
I don't know, Mr. Coulter, because as far as I know, we've always needed building permits, no matter who is in power, you know, or else I turn my house into a store right now.
No, it's beyond being building permits in terms of...
Yeah.
Controlling
things,
of
yeah.
well, how you can do and make your own choices. That's
yeah.
the point. Not versus violation of safety. I mean, that's where oftentimes you fall in that. Well, it's a matter of safety or,
yeah.
or whatever. Some rationale, which it goes back to a certain agenda of a certain political party.
Yeah, I'm teaching that today to a group of students over at Grant Middle School Authority.
Oh, yeah? Oh, great.
Yeah, and
great.
It starts from God on down to man, you know, but we're still responsible for following the law. abiding
use
all
the phrase consent of the governed. You know, most of the laws are voluntary complied with. People voluntarily comply with the law.
Oh,
otherwise,
yeah.
It'd be chaos.
Yes,
we have
it
a
would
small
be.
Percentage of people that break the law.
That's true. That's
and
so
those
true.
Are the ones you hear about. But most people just follow the law. I pretty much follow the law. I hope you do too, Dad.
It's a soft, it's a soft form of tyranny, is what it really is. That's what all you're really advocating.
Oh.
You know? Centralized
right.
tyranny.
Right. So
control
should,
of everything.
It should be interesting, and I hope now he has accepted the fact that he has been nominated as the president, and he doesn't have to relitigate the election, which he has been doing for a long time. You know,
it's one of the marks of tyranny.
Oh no!
Keeping going back and trying to legitimize yourself because you feel you're under attack. There's a word of that that's called paranoia, Ted. When people think they're under attack all the time, you know.
Well, I think he is under attack by the media every day.
Well, he's
in the public discourse.
He's doing
like
things that are going to lead to criticism. You know, quit doing this stupid stuff. Quit tweeting.
But Steve, that,
you know, quit being disrespectful. He's not even respectful to his own wife. You know,
oh, come when, on now.
No,
see, that's now this is where the discussion gets down to low levels when you start making these personal attacks.
That's not a personal attack. She got off the plane the other day, and he didn't even open the car door for her. You know, that shows a disrespect.
And Romney had his dog on top of his roof or something.
Well, I'm just saying.
I mean, if that's a level of discussion, then we aren't going to solve problems. And when
you,
people go on the personal
The other side
attack.
Did the same things with President Obama. They were very disrespectful of him.
Oh, let's not even go there.
Yeah.
That's another story.
I'm not saying it's justifiable for
show.
Us to do it, but
you know.
I just think President Trump has not
and
really
that,
been
that's
dignified.
Where, that's where things have to change. That's where to try to tie today's discussion is trying to come back to a level of discourse to solve problems versus the platitudes and generalities that our discussion got into the transit today here, which we're not able to be able to solve problems on. That's one of our big things. Because people are positioning politically to win elections, and with a short attention span of some voters, that's
yeah.
That falls for them, and then we don't get things solved.
What are you going to do, Ted?
Yeah, we've got a lot more people fired up and ready to take position in politics and stand up for what they believe is right and to protect, you know, things that they feel that are very important to them and
right.
their children, you know.
Right.
So I don't know how all this is going to turn out, but I have hopes that he will be a pretty decent president. And I feel that we as the American people, as Steve has said, as long as we stand up for what we believe in and for our rights that we feel that are our rights and don't want them taken by the government, you know. But the government's word is law. So we try to do our best and, right?
Yep.
And fight for what we believe in. And I thank you, gentlemen, for coming and spending time with us. And sorry that we lost that caller. Maybe it was the wrong number. I don't know. She was saying hello. I said hello.
Yeah.
So maybe it was the wrong number.
She'll call back later, maybe.
Yeah, maybe so.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. For legendary comedian and the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
And as I teased before we went to the break there, we have on today a lady who I've had on the program, I believe, two times before. But every time she comes on, I am excited. She's one of the most kind is the word I think of when I think of this woman, people that I have ever talked to. And I can tell you, I won't name names, but there are people who have been in Hollywood and had a great career who are not as kind as you might think they are. This woman exceeds the kindness that you might think she would be. She has the greatest laugh in the world, and she was the voice of one of the greatest villains in Disney history, Ursula from The Little Mermaid. And along the way, she did a lot of great game shows and television series, and worked with people like Jimmy Durante, Gloria Swanson, Danny Thomas, Sid Caesar. The list goes on and on. She is amazing, the amazing Pat Carroll. Pat, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Scott. Now I'm going to have to be a because you said so much about me nice. But I'll tell you, Scott, it's one of the easiest the world. And I wish with all the things we have going on about doing this and doing that, if we were all just more kind to each other. Think of yourself in relationship to other people. And they go through the same things you do. And just be kind. It's so easy, it's so simple, and I've seen rooms change because somebody was kind. And that's a great impact.
Pat, Ed, as we end this interview, and I always hate to say goodbye, but you say you love to sing. I love your voice. Can you give us a little line of something as we part ways here?
A song?
Any song you like.
Did you ever go into an Irishman shanty where whiskey is worth? And the booze is plenty. The table.
Everybody knows what it is.
And the hatch in the door, the house is shut with a latch.
You know, I could not believe
Pat Carroll, I adore you. Please come back.
I adore you back, Scott.
I'm not
I've had a lot of fun. Thank you for having me on.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, the place to talk. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Find us on Facebook by searching WWGH Marion, Ohio, 107.1 so, FM, and clicking like for exclusive content.
Hemmerly's Flowers and Gifts, address 615 East Center Street here in Marion. Telephone number 740-387-1163. Website hemmerlysflowers.com is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio.
Programming on WWGH Radio is supported by L&P Cake and Candy Shop, address 799 Bell Fountain Avenue, Marion, Ohio, telephone number 740-382-1991.
Harold's Router Service, 242 Jefferson Street here in Marion, telephone number 740-383-1841, is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
Programming on WWGH Radio is supported by the Central Ohio Farmers Co-op for Propane Delivery, serving our residential and farming communities in this area since 1989. Telephone number 1-800-HEAT-GAS.